Hi, it's Jamie, Progressive number one, number two employee. Leave a message at the...
Hi, Jamie. It's you, Jamie. Don't be alarmed, but I think there's a guy following you. Maybe we should get that guard dog we talked about? Nothing too scary. Maybe like a Bichon with an attitude? You know, Progressive's collision insurance covers injured dogs and cats at no extra cost, so... Wait, the guy stood up when I stood up. He's on the phone. He's looking right at me. Oh, wait, it's just my reflection. Don't tell anyone about this.
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Pet coverage not available in New Hampshire and North Carolina.
You are Locked On Thunder, your daily podcast on the Oklahoma City Thunder, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team, every day.
Hello there, everyone. We're locking in for episode 66 of Locked On Thunder, presented by the Norman Transcript. I'm your host, Fred Katz.
Locked On Thunder is part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Head on to iTunes and search Locked On Thunder to subscribe to the podcast there. You can leave a review once you're on that page also. And you can find us on audioboom.com too. You can log on to normantranscript.com and check out my blog, Thunder Road, under the sports tab on the site for more Thunder coverage on every day of the week, Monday through Friday. Lots of Thunder coverage. No games now. Opening day is in less than a week by the time this podcast goes up Thursday morning. So we're really close to basketball, but we're done with the preseason. Thunder finished 3-3 on the exhibition season. Now I got a guy coming in to talk some Thunder from the Washington Post, one of my buddies, Tim Bontemps. What's happening?
Hey, Fred. How's it going, man?
It's going wonderful. So you just moved out to what is now, I think, most people from Oklahoma's least favorite city. How's the move?
The move has been good. Beautiful weather here in the Bay Area today. As you know, I'm from New York, where you're from, and it's been an adjustment moving out here, but so far so good, and I'm excited for the season to get started next week, and excited to see you the week after that for what should be a very interesting Thunder Warriors game up here in the Bay Area, I think on November 3rd.
How annoying is it to move cross country? It's such a pain, right?
Yeah, I mean, I was fortunate. I got a very fortunate living situation here in San Francisco, where I was moving into a fully furnished apartment, so I really just had to basically drive my car across the country with clothes in it and a couple other things. So it wasn't as bad as it could have been, but it was a bit of an ordeal, and I can't really imagine, you know, people who have to move, like, you know, their entire lives across the country or, you know, across the world if they're moving overseas or something. I can't imagine the logistical hurdles I have to go into that. Luckily, I just got kind of a small taste of it, but yeah, it was definitely an experience, no question about that.
Oh yeah, going overseas, I can't even imagine. Like I went to Oklahoma, and I just thought that was such a pain of a process that took like even longer than I thought it would. And going overseas, I don't even know how people do that stuff. That's got to be remarkably difficult.
Yeah, gotta be completely insane. I can't even imagine it. I mean, like you said, this was a challenge. Just getting myself, you know, really, I just had to get myself across the country, and that was a challenge. So I can't imagine trying to. You know, if you had kids or were trying to move a family or something, it would just be impossible, I'm sure.
All right. So, Tim, as you know, I'm going to tell the people, too, the reason that I asked you to come on the podcast was I saw you put together a bold predictions, 10 bold predictions for the upcoming NBA season. Tim is the national NBA writer for the Washington Post. They introduced him as Washington Post, but he's the national NBA writer, formerly of the New York Post, going from post to post. And you put in one of your bold predictions, and I want the listeners to be clear. These are framed as bold predictions. This is definitely going to happen. Bold predictions are always out on the limb.
To be fair to you, they are things that I do think are going to happen. They're just also things that I'm willing to admit that are, you know, they're on the border of possibility. Like they could happen, and I think they will, but you know, it certainly won't be a surprise if they don't.
Right. I mean, there are degrees of certainty. Like, I'm sure you're more certain that LeBron James is going to have a good season than you are.
Yes, that's very true.
Anyway, the 10th one, the kicker. was that Oklahoma City will miss the playoffs. I'm just going to read quickly because you kind of just have one graph on here. So I'm gonna read your graph quickly, and then I'll let you explain it further because I'm sure, you have thoughts on this beyond the graph. And you wrote, before training camp began, the expectation was the Thunder were still going to be a mid-tier playoff team in the Western Conference despite losing Kevin Durant and Serge Ibaka this summer. But that was before I saw the Thunder play on multiple occasions during the exhibition season. It's always dangerous to base too much on the preseason, especially when much of it was played without Steven Adams, easily Oklahoma City's second-best player and best defender. Still, the preseason exposed two significant issues in Oklahoma City, a lack of shooting offensively and a lack of defensive talent, period. That's a devastating combination in today's NBA and will prove to be Oklahoma City's undoing, no matter how many times Russell Westbrook puts up insane stat lines this season. Anything that you want to expand on that before we get into a deeper discussion?
I guess what I would say is I have, as I knew I would, gotten some pushback on the interwebs today. Because I had said previously that I thought Russell Westbrook was the favorite to be the NBA's MVP this season after he agreed to stay in Oklahoma City for the season, which at the time I also felt was going to be the case. But and he is the betting favorite now, actually. So I really wasn't even wrong in predicting that. But I like I said in the piece, It is dangerous to base stuff on the preseason, and especially when Steven Adams didn't play for a lot of it, and as I'm sure we'll talk about later, he's looked great the last couple games. But if you look at this Thunder team, they basically only have two good defensive players, and they have maybe two good shooters. If we want to say that Alex Abrines is a good shooter, which I think he still needs to prove, you know, and the other one's Anthony Morrow, who is not going to start and may not play much.
I think you can count Ersan Ilyasova as a good shooter.
He's a good shooter as a power forward. But basically, when you watch Oklahoma City play, we'll start on offense. When you watch Oklahoma City play, the best shooter on the court on their starting lineup is Domantas Sabonis, who is a guy that people weren't sure was going to be a three-point shooter when he got to the NBA. I really like Sabonis. I think he's going to be really good. But it's hard to count on a rookie to be a really important player for you, because a lot of times rookies just aren't good. Going from college to the NBA is a gigantic transition for anybody. And, you know, I think Sabonis is going to have his ups and downs, even though I think he's great and has looked really good. You know, he was one of the bright spots of the preseason as their starting power forward. But they just don't have any shooting, and the shooters they do have are very limited. You know, Abrines has looked okay, but I don't, you know, he's kind of a one-way player. Anthony Morrow, who is a great dude, one of the best dudes in the league and one of the best shooters in the league, is definitely a one-way player. You know, and neither one of them can really guard anybody. So it's going to be hard, and it's going to be hard for the Thunder to get enough shooting on the court to have proper spacing to have an effective offense. On defense, as Steven Adams has become an excellent defensive center, and Andre Roberson's a really good defensive wing. But again, I think Sabonis is going to struggle on defense, as just about every rookie does. I really haven't been impressed at all with the backcourt of Victor Oladipo and Russell Westbrook defensively in the games that I've seen. You know, I watched them play against Dallas, and they just were turnstiles. J.J. Barea and Darren Williams are blowing by both of them all game. I look at the Thunder, and if you're not going to be really good on defense, which I think probably the best case scenario is there, you know, if they get to maybe 12th or 13th where they were last year, I think that's probably the best case scenario for them. And you aren't going to have any shooting on offense. It's just hard to see how this team is going to get to 45 or 46 wins. I think Westbrook is going to have a fantastic year, and I freely admit that I could be wrong if Steven Adams has as good a year as I think he's capable of having. You know, I think he's a fantastic player, but I just look at the group in total, and, you know, they subtracted Durant and subtracted Ibaka, and they brought in no one as good as either of them, and I think it's just going to be really tough for them to make up for that and get back into the postseason.
I think those are all actually fair points, except I do I do disagree with you on Victor Oladipo a little bit. I mean, look, he gambles too much to my taste, and that backcourt in general is just super gambly. But I do think Victor Oladipo, I mean, he certainly played poorly against Dallas, but I don't think that necessarily negates a few years of seeing him be a pretty good one-on-one defender. As a team defender, there are a lot of things I think he can do differently.
And to
but
be
as
fair,
a one-on-one defender, I think he's good at that.
To be fair to you, that's true. However, both he and Westbrook are habitual gamblers, and that's going to kill them, I think. Like, in that Dallas game was a perfect example. Both of those guys were flying around trying to get steal after steal, and it just turned into them giving up layup after layup. And maybe that'll change, and when the regular season starts, they'll just not do that. But Russell Westbrook has done that his entire career. I don't think that's going to stop. And, you know, maybe Victor Oladipo will be more disciplined at that end, but they really need both of those guys to be disciplined and locked in all the time. And it's hard for me to see them doing that based on their history.
I agree with you 100% on Westbrook. Westbrook's not going to – I mean, Westbrook's been this since he came into the league. He's not going to change in terms of gambling on the defensive end. That's just – that's in his DNA now. It's permanently branded there, and it's not changing. There's nothing
right.
to change on that. So
right.
I have no pushback on that point. I do have some pushback on Oladipo because Oladipo talks about not wanting to gamble as much, and I don't think he's just kind of saying it. I think with him, the gambling moves when he jumps in passing lanes, when he follows a guy instead of around behind a screen, which is a more conservative move, when he'll jump out in front of the screen and maybe try to pick off a potential pass, and he'll end up giving up an open three or an open cut or something like that. I think those sorts of plays, I don't think he's ever going to fully get rid of them, because it's also a natural move for him to do too. It's clearly something he was doing for a long time, but I think he very openly acknowledges and talks about the problem. And I think that's something like that with you have, when you have that mentality, I do think that makes it something that you can get better at. I don't know if it's something that ever completely goes away, but he is a physically talented defender. I mean, Westbrook has the physical traits of a talented defender too. Westbrook is just, he's a different animal with the way that he plays defense and that kind of stuff, because there are a lot of things that he does which are just fundamentally unsound.
Well, he just doesn't bother to do it the right way. I mean, it's harsh to say it that way, but it's true. I mean, if Russell Westbrook wanted to be a really good defensive player, he would be a really good defensive player. He's one of the most athletic players in the league. He wants to try to get a lot of steals, so that's what he does.
It's not. You know? It's not only that issue with Westbrook, though. I think that's the common issue that people talk about with Westbrook. But there are certain times, like he does get lost a lot.
Yes,
we even saw it yesterday. Like. Not the gambling stuff. Like, he just gets lost on defense. He comes off his man, and then he just kind of meanders around. I mean,
well, that's part of what I'm saying, though. Like, if he wanted to be a good defender, like, part of that is being locked in, and like, he just doesn't. When he's trying to get a steal, and then if his guy doesn't have the ball, to your point, he stops paying attention.
You know, I don't think that's really an issue. I think the issues with Oladipo, well, the gambling stuff is pretty consistent, and they do a lot of similar things in that sense. But I don't know. I think Oladipo is locked in all the time on defense. I do think he's locked in, and I do think if he acknowledges the problem, it's something. Look, I'm not a scout. I don't know if it's something that he 100% will or won't improve. But I do acknowledge that realizing a problem is the first step in fixing it. and I think it is fair to note those different mentalities
sure.
between the two.
I definitely wouldn't say that they're exactly the same in that. I think Oladipo, going back to college, has a better track record of being a consistent defender than Westbrook does. And he's a younger player, so I give him more of a chance of growing out of the bad habits that he has too.
He's had a lot of different coaches. He's played in a lot of different defenses. Guys have asked him. He's been plugged into a lot of different roles. He had Jock Vaughn. He had Scott Skiles. He had James Borrego. Now he's got Billy Donovan. I mean, four coaches in 4 years, right?
Yeah.
Four, basically three and a half different defenses. I mean, Borrego and Jock Vaughn were mostly doing the same stuff, but Borrego changed some stuff too. And when he took over as that interim role in Orlando, and then obviously a huge change with Scott Skiles. He got jerked around from the starting lineup to the bench, playing with a million different people. He's a point guard. He's a shooting guard. He's a point guard again. He's a shooting guard. I mean, it's just not a good way to develop a player. Maybe when he gets into an organization that I think is going out of its way to give him consistency and reliability. I mean, that's something that could potentially help him change too.
Yeah, no, I agree. I agree with that. You know, I think he has the potential to become a pretty good defensive player. Although him playing at small forward is going to make that tough because he's just not as big as a lot of the guys that he's guarding at that, or not small forward, I mean shooting guard. That kind of puts him at a little bit of a disadvantage. But he's certainly athletic enough and has shown in the past that he's good enough to be a good defensive player. But you know, the problem is Oklahoma City needs him to be that good immediately. And like, maybe he can get there this season. Maybe he gets there next season. Like you said, if he gets a chance to establish himself somewhere. But I think for the Thunder to make the playoffs, they needed him to be like that now and like that for 82 games. And I think at this point, that's still a lot to ask.
You know what I think is interesting about your defense in terms of the team defense argument? I think individually, we think probably similarly of every single player as a defender on this team. Like, I think if you went through and you named Westbrook, Oladipo, Robertson, Ilyasova, Sabonis, Adams, all that stuff,
right,
you just went through and you had us, you know, grade those guys as individual defenders, I bet you all of our grades for every one of those defenders would be really similar. But I think what's interesting, so I don't disagree with you. I think there are more minus defenders on this team than there are plus defenders. I've also said, I said in one of the episodes of this podcast, or maybe probably multiple ones, honestly, I think they're going to finish around eighth, assuming guys stay healthy. I think they're going to finish around eighth-ish in defense and maybe like the 17 to 20 range in offense. And I think that can get you to 45.
If they finish eighth and 18th, I'll probably be wrong.
Right. Well, one thing that's what I think is interesting, because I agree with you on the individual defenders. And I agree with you that if you go through the 16 guys who are on guaranteed contracts on this roster, the majority of them there are more minus defenders than there are plus defenders. And some of where they get ranked in defense, honestly, will have to do with, whether Josh Huestis plays or not, because I think he's a pretty good defensive player. I don't know how many minutes he's going to get, but this defense, I think with the plus defenders, the ones who are there, the Adamses, the Robertsons, are going to get a lot of minutes, and I think they're going to make enough of an impact to almost cancel out some of the minus defenders. And I know you love Steven Adams. I mean, he's looked so good this preseason. I mean, I know we both thought he was going to be really good coming into this year. I think you might have been even higher on him than I was. You've been touting him as possibly an all-star, which would be interesting if there were two all-stars on the team that didn't make the playoffs. But Adams has been, I think, even better than better than I thought so far. I think he is good enough defensively to where when he's on the floor, especially if you get Robertson, who I think is a wonderful wing defender, if you put him on the floor with guys who can at least create some turnovers, create some steals, which the Thunder backcourt can do, Oladipo gains a little bit of discipline, you put a good – and you just get decent team defense around him. I mean, I think that's a guy who can put you in the top 10 purely based on himself. I do think it's possible Steven Adams gets to that role. And I know you tweeted out a caveat. You know, if the Thunder do get there, it's because Steven Adams was that good. And I'm just wondering how likely you think that scenario, like on the, if you know, most certainty is LeBron James is going to have a good year this year. And least certainty is LeBron James is going to, you know, have the worst year in the history of the NBA this year. Where does that scenario fall on your scale?
Well, you know what honestly had me decide to change my opinion on the Thunder was just how awful they've been without Adams. And the reason I say that is, I mean, look, Steven Adams is a center, right? So the most minutes he's probably going to play are 32 a game, like realistically.
Yeah, that's what I figure he'll be at too,
30 to 32 minutes. So a third of every game is going to be played with him on the bench. And when he's on the bench, they're going to be awful. Like, I just really think that. I mean, you look at these preseason games, you look at the Dallas game, you look at both games in Spain, they were destroyed on defense whenever he wasn't on the court. I disagree with you about Roberson. I think Roberson's a really good defensive player. But the problem with a lot of Oklahoma City's roster and is that, you know, because they had Russell Westbrook, Kevin Durant, and Serge Ibaka, and specifically Westbrook and Durant, Sam Presti went out and he found as many guys that were kind of specialists to fit in around them, right? Guys that could do one thing really, really well. And when you had, you know, a couple of mega stars, you just needed guys to fill in around them and be really good at certain things. And if they're really good at certain things, you can kind of mask the stuff they're not good at when you have guys as good as Westbrook and Durant around them. The problem now is the Thunder now have all these one-way guys, and they don't have that second superstar to mask a lot of those inefficiencies. You know, you look at guys like Roberson, like Enes Kanter, like Morrow, like Abrinas. You go down the roster, and they just have all these guys that are really good on one side and awful on the other. You know, Roberson's just a zero on offense still. I was hoping he would take a step forward and be a little better shooter. From what I've seen, he's exactly the same player, which is still a quality, like a guy who's worthy of being in the NBA and a guy who can help a team. But on a team like the Thunder, I just think they have too many guys that are going to be able to be exposed on one end or the other. And with Adam specifically, I just think whenever he's not on the court, they're going to be so bad on defense that it's going to counteract how they'll probably be pretty darn good a lot of the time when he's on the court, because he is just a gigantic monster in the paint. I mean, if anybody watched, you know, the Thunder play the Spurs and the Warriors last year in the playoffs, I mean, Steven Adams was just a human wrecking ball in the paint. I mean, Draymond Green had just no chance trying to guard him. He's one of the few guys that he can't really guard at center because Adams is just too big and strong. It really concerned me. So, yeah, it just really concerned me how bad this team was without him. And I just don't know if they can put together enough minutes of quality defense without him on the court to still be good. And that's assuming Adams plays all 82 games. The way Adams plays, he's a guy that's probably going to miss a few games every year, as tough as he is, because he does really throw himself around and, you know, he puts his body on through a lot of punishment. So, you know, if he sits out 5 or 10 games, I think it could be really tough for the Thunder to win a lot of those games, just because, you know, I think the drop off without him there is so great. So, like you said, I'm a huge Adams fan. I think he's going to be really good, but the games they played without him really, to me, kind of shined a light on some of their real deficiencies. And you know, that was a big, like I think I said in the piece, that was a big reason why I decided to kind of reverse some of my thinking on them this season.
I think that logic all makes sense. I mean, that's part of the reason people talk about how they slugged their way through the regular season last year, and that's why they fell to 12th in defense, and that was a part of it. There were times where they looked energyless, and Serge Ibaka probably had his best or his worst defensive year in a few seasons. But like, if that's a part of it. There's not one reason why they were 12th. There's a million. But if you're talking about the most significant reasons, one of the things that people don't really piece together, people talk about how Steven Adams is a good player and he's important to the Thunder defense. But one of the reasons why is because when Adams and Ibaka were off the court, whether it was Kanter playing defense at center or whatever it was, they were so much worse on defense, and that really pulled it down. And people wonder, why the heck did the defense get so much better in the postseason? Well, a huge part of it was that Ibaka and Adams were playing major minutes together a lot. Like, Steven Adams' minutes went up, and Serge Ibaka and Adams were playing more together than they were in the regular season. And that makes a huge difference when you're coming in with guys who are really majorly detrimental defensive players. I mean, Kanter is an incredible offensive player, and I'm not one of those people that says, oh, there's no role for him, there's no way he can play. There are roles for a guy who's that good offensively, who's that good right. rebounder. Like, there are ways you can make that guy work, and I think the Thunder have done a good job of making that work. But when he's on the floor, especially with bench defenders, the bench is going to struggle in a lot of ways.
And that was
a theme last year.
Right, and like last year, a lot of the time, you know, I don't remember this 100%, but I think a lot of the time when he played, they would try to play him with Ibaka. So there would be at least a decent and he played some with Adams, which you can do against certain teams. But, you know, the problem is now, like I said, I'm a huge Sabonis fan. Like, I really loved him in college. I think he's going to be a real good player. He's looked great. But, like, Sabonis and Kanter together, or Kanter and Ilyasova together, like, that's not a good defensive front line at all.
That's one of the reasons why I wonder if Josh Huestis is going to play.
There's another guy that's a one-way player too.
Well, and yeah, like, but the other option is Kyle Singler. So you're kind of, I mean, right. Look, I'm not arguing this is a perfectly built roster. It's not.
Oh no, I know you're not.
But that's kind of why I find these personnel decisions to be interesting, because.
But we certainly agree on that. I think they're going to be a really interesting team just for that reason.
Yeah, I mean, just thinking about who – there's a lot of redundancy on the roster, and there are a million guys, like you said, who are kind of either offense-only and defense minuses, or defense-only and offense minuses. And it'll be really interesting. That's why I think – I mean, one of my – I mean, you talk about your bold predictions. One of my bold predictions this year, which is one of the weirdest bold predictions and, like, nerdiest. And one of the nerdiest bold predictions I could possibly make, but one of my bold predictions is that Billy Donovan is going to play more lineup combinations than any other coach in the league this year. And I think that's...
Yeah, I could see that.
And I think it's because he's going to be playing so many... He's going to be playing so many matchups. I don't think we're necessarily going to see, all right, Kyle Singler's in the rotation, and I guess this means Kyle Singler is going to be good for 15 to 18 minutes a night now. Or, you know, all right, Josh Huestis beat out Kyle Singler. Now he's in the rotation. Maybe if he doesn't play well in 3 months, Kyle Singler comes back in, but that's it. I think it's going to be a matchup thing, and it's going to be, oh, they're getting, you know, for whatever reason, you know, Huestis matches up against the personnel better. Or, you know, they need some more shooting tonight, so Kyle Singler's got to be out there to give you some semblance of floor spacing that Huestis can't do. You know, there are other guys with that too. You know, maybe Andre Robertson has to play fewer minutes, in some games. In other games, he's going to play 30 because they need him on defense so badly. Like, I think there are going to be a lot of different lineups that they're going to try out because of this stuff. I was critical of Billy Donovan during the regular season last year. Now, I wasn't covering this team yet during the regular season last year, but I was covering the league, and there were a lot of things Billy Donovan did during the regular season that I disagreed with in a lot of ways. I changed my opinion of him during the postseason. Whether that's
you became a homer
or not.
I'm just kidding. That was just too easy.
It's true. When you come to Oklahoma City, you have to be part of the Homer Oklahoma City. It's one of the prerequisites. They won't give you a job if you're not.
That's right. That's what happens when you cover a beat for any team. You just automatically become a homer. Doesn't matter where you are.
No, we're not reporters. We're actually just fans.
That's right.
Reporters. That's why I had you on. I just wanted to debate you about how you destroyed my team, Jim. You destroyed my team irrationally. But I thought he was really impressive in the playoffs.
I thought he was great too. I wrote a whole column after they went up 3-1 in I wrote a whole column when they went up 3-1 on I think it was in the West Warriors Conference series.
Finals. Yeah, it was the Warriors. Yeah.
Yeah, when they went up 3-1, I wrote a whole column about how they had done a great job of building this team that had all the pieces the whole master plan that Donovan and Pressey had put together had worked.
Right. I guess part of my logic in thinking that they're going to make a team with, because there's no denying there are a million one-way pieces, and I don't think that's really anyone's fault.
I don't think it is either. I mean, it was kind of the genius of what Sam Presti had done with the team. Like, you know, because they had spent all this money on Durant and Westbrook and Ibaka, they had limited resources and low draft picks to go fill out the roster. So they kind of went out and piecemealed together the roster with guys that, you know, they went and specialized in certain things. And now, you know, and that, look, I was going to pick the Thunder to win the championship this year when the day last season ended. But yeah, I thought they were going to be the best team. So it worked.
I validated too.
Yeah. I mean, it worked. Like, the plan was working. And, you know, then obviously events changed. And it's just tough. Like I said, they just have so many guys that like you said, that's an interesting prediction. And I think it could wind up being proven true, because
I really do feel like, to your point, Donovan is going to have to do so much monkeying around with his rotation to try to find lineups that are going to work. And I do think that I think that is a negative thing too, because if you look at the teams that are good every year, by and large, they're teams that have both health and they have a consistent rotation where guys get comfortable playing together and comfortable in the roles they're in. It's really hard for guys in the NBA, as you know, as well as anybody just being around it. You know, it's really hard when guys can't get into a habit and a feel for kind of, all right, I'm going to go and I'm going to play 15 minutes with these guys and these minutes in the game. Like, if guys can't kind of get into that rhythm of what they're going to do and when they're going to do it and how they're going to do it, it's really hard for NBA players to develop the consistency they need to be really productive over the course of an NBA season.
Yeah, I mean, that's basically the point that I was just making about Victor Oladipo, right?
Right.
How they dress exactly. Him around in a million different roles, and I think there's a pretty good chance that stunted his development in Orlando.
Didn't help.
No, it definitely didn't help. I mean, when you do that when someone's already developed, then you can kind of turn them into an everything man. But when you do it in their developmental years, it's like when you're teaching a child or teaching an infant how to speak. You don't want to, you know, maybe it's not, because I guess you can speak a million different languages to an infant and they absorb it, and that's when they're most ready to learn. So maybe I'll edit like that part out.
I like that you're contradicting your own theories as you create that.
Maybe I'm just going to edit that part out, because that didn't make any sense. You know what it's like? It's like when you're trying to develop a basketball player. That's what it's like. It's nothing like.
You should definitely leave that in for comedy's sake. Yeah. I mean, you know, it is weird because I do like a lot of the individual players on the team. You know, specifically specifically Adams, Sabonis, and obviously Westbrook. I just think there's too many. Here's the way I think it's the best to look at NBA teams, right? When you go into the season, you're looking at a team. If you think a team is going to get to a certain benchmark or do a certain thing or win it, whether it's win a championship or make the playoffs or win 30 games or whatever, you should make a list and say, what has to go right for them to do what I think they're going to do? And I think for the Thunder, there's just a lot of things that have to go right. And if one or two go wrong or don't go as well as they need to, I think it's going to be really hard for them. You know, when I was doing this bold predictions column, I think I told you this earlier when you asked if I wanted to come on. I was going back and forth between saying the Thunder would miss the playoffs or saying Memphis would miss the playoffs. And they're both in kind of a similar situation. Memphis, I think, has clearly more talent than Oklahoma City. Memphis has more talent than a lot of teams, specifically in the starting lineup. But Memphis has all these guys that have a ton of injury questions, and they don't have a lot of depth. You know, they're a lot like the Knicks, where if everything works out right, maybe Memphis will be pretty good. But if they don't get healthy or their guys get hurt, they could be really bad. I wound up picking them because it seems like, you know, at least for now, Marc Gasol is going to be okay. And I figured that, you know, Marc Gasol and Mike Conley have consistently been really good. You know, they've won a ton of games whenever they've been on the court. And I'm saying all this because I do think that if the Thunder wind up being good, it's going to be a similar formula that Steven Adams and Russell Westbrook wind up just being good enough to carry this team to a pretty good record and to make the playoffs. But I do think for them to be as good as I thought they were going to be, there's just a lot of things that have to come together, whether it's they need a bunch of guys to learn how to shoot in ways they haven't before. They need a bunch of guys to play defense in a way they haven't before. But I think it's just going to be really tough for them to live up to the expectations that I initially thought they were going to be able to.
When was the last time a team had two All-Stars and didn't make the playoffs?
Well, I mean, again, like, I mean, I don't know. I mean, probably never. I mean, like, that goes back to what I said on Twitter earlier when you tweeted that. Like, if Steven Adams makes the All-Star team, then I'm going to be wrong. Like, because I think that'll mean that he's a – you know, he's having an insane season, and, you know, the Thunder wind up winning 45 or 48 games, and, you know, barring, you know, he makes the All-Star team and then gets hurt a week later. Like, if he makes the All-Star team and they're healthy,
It's hard to see how they don't make the playoffs. I don't know if they'll be quite that good, and we'll see. But yeah, I mean, you're right. If he's a playoff or if he's an all-star, it's hard to see how this team isn't a 45-win team, because it's just hard. It's hard to not be a playoff team if you have two guys that are playing that well.
I'm gonna finish up the long-winded point I made before I misspoke about Baby, and then I'll ask you a question. And we'll get out of here.
Sure.
All right. So I think the point I was making about Donovan before is that you're in terms of development, in terms of habits, and maybe with some players in terms of performance, I'm with you. But, you know, a guy playing, you know, getting a DMP CD for three straight games and then going out and playing for, you know, two games of 22 minutes and then, you know, 1 minute and then, you know, 17 minutes and then back to 5 minutes or whatever it is. That's right. An inconsistent role. You know, that's not just true for basketball. Like, that's true for life.
True
you know,
for
imagine,
everything, yeah.
Imagine, it's so much easier in some ways being, like, a beat reporter than it is just a general assignment reporter.
1,000%. Same thing.
Yeah, because you can hone in your role, right? You know your role. You know what you're doing. Maybe you don't know what you're writing on every day. Maybe news breaks or something that you weren't expecting and you have to do it, but your role is remaining the same. It would be so much harder if I had to write about this and then and there are people who do this. I don't know how the heck they do it. Like they're just really good at their jobs. You know, they're general assignment reporters and that's something. But at the same time, I do think from a tactical perspective, I think Billy Donovan is really bright. And I think he's going to figure out ways to make lineups that from a tactical perspective work and improve the team. I don't think he'd be doing that stuff if that didn't actually work. I guess I have faith that Billy Donovan is actually going to be able to pull that off, and maybe certain lineup combinations, certain things that he does, you know, similarly to how during the, it's different in a postseason series than it is during the regular season. There's no question, but you know, similarly to how he found, you know, a lineup to combat the death lineup against the Warriors, how he found that Adams Canner lineup against the Spurs, which played so well. I think he's going to be able to find some lineups that work for him just through trial and error. Maybe it doesn't happen the first time he plays a team, but you know, that second time through the lineup, I think maybe he'll be able to figure some more stuff out. And I think that will maybe gain them an extra win here or there throughout the season from maybe if he weren't going through that process.
No, I think that's fair. And the one thing, the other thing Oklahoma City has going for it, as opposed to somebody like Memphis, is that they do have a lot of young guys, and I think there's a better chance than not that they're healthier than most teams because of that. Just having a bunch of young guys as opposed to having a team like Memphis where they're older. So could Oklahoma City win 41 games and get into the playoffs because a team like Memphis has a million injuries or somebody else goes down too? Sure. Like, I think that's possible too. I do think that's a good point about Donovan. I really was impressed with him as the season went on. I thought he did a really nice job getting used to the league, getting used to that team. Finding some nice adjustments during the playoffs. You know, I thought he really did a nice job. To me, you know, one thing we've barely touched on really is just how bad a shooting team this is. And, you know, in today's NBA, especially, it's just really hard to win if you're getting heavily outscored at the 3-point line. And I think the Thunder are going to be a bad 3-point shooting team, and the defense is a huge question. So, you know, we'll see how it goes. But I am hesitant about it because I do think that, you know, Westbrook and Adams are capable of making me look foolish because they are both excellent players, but. You know, I just keep going back to those shooting and defense concerns. I just think it's going to wind up being too much.
Now, I as you can probably tell, I don't quite agree with your point, but I'm going to make part of your argument for you as well in terms of the defense struggling. And I wrote a column on this, I don't know, probably a month and a half ago. They're all jumbled together. Like, I don't know how anybody even reads me at this point. I feel like I'm saying the same thing every single day.
Yeah, we all are ready for the season to start. That's why we're all doing these prediction things, because we have to get through the next week.
Exactly. I wrote something, I don't know, a month and a half ago, 2 months ago. I'll try to find it, maybe I'll tweet it out. But I think what could end up being the biggest weakness for the Thunder from a defense perspective this year could be their transition defense. And I think the reason for that is because this team is all in on offensive rebounding. And I don't think you can acquire this many. I mean, they led the league in offensive rebound rate last year. And I don't think you can go out and acquire all of these offensive rebounders. Like, it's not just the bigs. It's Russell Westbrook had the highest offensive rebound rate of any point guard. Andre Robertson was top three among wings. You know, there's Tanner, there's Adams, there's Laverne, there's Ilyasova.
Right.
Sabonis is a scrappy rebounder. Like, there are a million, like, well above average offensive rebounders on this team. And Tanner is amazing at it. And you've got these guys who – I don't think you can get all of these guys. You can go so all in on offensive rebounding and then say, all right, let's get back as quickly as we possibly can on defense. You obviously right. want to tread the line, but they're going to chase offensive rebounds. Like another.
Well, and they have to, because, you know, they're not going to be, when Kander's on the court, you're going to stink on defense, right? Like, this is hard to get around that. So what's the best way to counteract it? Try to be a supernova on offense. And the best way to do that is to play to Kander's strengths and let him, to your point, be, you know, maybe the best offensive rebounder in the league and just go hammer the glass and try to at least, you know, mitigate the issues he's going to present on the other end by letting him just destroy teams on the glass.
Yeah, one of the reasons why, just from like a basketball perspective, I've always found Kander to be one of the more interesting guys to break down in the entire league is because, like, so Enes Kanter led the entire NBA in offensive rebound rate last year. That's great. That's a great stat to lead the league in as the entire league has gotten away from offensive rebounding basically over the last 15, 20 years. I'm not being sarcastic.
It's true. It he's a throwback player.
I think it's great to have a guy who can basically be a guy who guys just aren't used to guarding like that. He led the league in offensive rebound rate. He also, according to Nylon Calculus, led the league in most offensive rebounds chased. Or offensive rebound chase percentage, not most total, but the percentage of offensive rebound opportunities that he chased. And that's the thing with Kanter. That's the kind of stuff that's going to hurt your offense, your transition defense, because you're running in literally the opposite direction of back down on defense. And so I wonder what their transition defense is going to be like this year.
Westbrook is a guy like Dwayne Wade who loves to yell at the ref and complain too, which doesn't help with that. It could be really bad. I mean, you know, and that's the other thing too. The Thunder playing these multi-big lineups all the time, they're just going to be slower than a lot of other teams. Just in terms of getting back, like, if you're playing Sabonis and Steven Adams, like, you're going to be slower than the other team a lot of the time. Now, you're going to make up for that because, to your point, they're still going to be a fantastic rebounding team, but you're probably going to struggle to beat a smaller team down the court because those guys are just going to not be, you know, as quick as, you know, a smaller guy that's guarding.
So before we go, I'll ask you one question.
Sure.
What is, or one two-part question. What do you think, pretending the injuries don't exist, because I hate it when, you know, you say worst case scenario,
sure.
Russell Westbrook, that's a cheap answer.
Sure.
Pretending injuries don't exist, what's the floor for this team and what's the ceiling for this team?
All right. So the ceiling, I think, is like 48 to 50 wins. If everything goes right, you know, guys like Oladipo take a big step forward, Sabonis, you know, I think I had him third in rookie of the year balloting. Like if Sabonis is a, you know, a challenger for rookie of the year and is, a, you know, is a, at least a neutral player for them. Cause I, you know, people, like I said earlier, none of this is knocking Sabonis at all because I think he's going to be a terrific player, but rookies are just generally bad. So if he can just not be a negative and play a lot of minutes, that'll be a big win. So if, you know, if Westbrook is, you know, an MVP candidate, if Steven Adams is a, you know, an all-star, a borderline all-star, they both are playing 75-plus games, you know, your prediction on the defense proves true and they finish somewhere at the top, you know, 8 to 10 range. You know, if their offense isn't horrible and is in the 18 range, yeah, they can probably get to 48 wins. What's the worst case scenario? Assuming health, I mean, the worst case scenario, I think, is that their defense is atrocious. It's probably somewhere in the low, you know, the high to mid 20s, like 22 to 24, maybe. Their offense is 14 to 16 and just can't get over the fact they can't recover from the fact that they are just such a terrible shooting team and a bad 3-point shooting team that they can't really get to be a more than an average offense even with Westbrook on the team. And you know, they don't get huge steps forward from Oladipo. Sabonis looks like a rookie. Steven Adams is a good player, but doesn't, you know, become like that borderline all-star type player. That's probably, I don't know, 38 to 40 wins, I would say. I mean, I think the variance is kind of high for them because they do have some young guys that could get better, and their issues are just so pronounced that, you know, if they do go kind of to the low end on both sides for their offense, they are, I think, going to be, you know, a slightly below 500 team. And if they kind of get to their absolute maximum, which I think is, you know, that 16 to 18 range on defense or on offense, and that, I should say, like, you know, a little, yeah, that 16 to 18 range on offense and that 8 to 10 range on defense, then all of a sudden you're talking about, you know, a high 40 win team. So they're going to be fascinating to watch. And, you know, Russ all season is going to be on a mission, obviously. And, you know, I love watching Adams play. He's just a fun player to watch. And I like Sabonis. So it is kind of weird. I do like a lot of these guys, but I just think in the aggregate, you know, their issues are just gonna wind up being, you know, a lot for them to try to overcome.
Anything to plug before we go?
You can go to the Washington Post. You can go to WashingtonPost.com. It should be 90. I think it's 99 cents a week for the rest of the year to subscribe. For the best, you know, my opinion. I know I'm biased, but I think we've had the best coverage of this insane election season of any publication or outlet of any kind in the country. So
Farenthold is, I might write him into my ballot.
Well, he's been, David Farenthold's done an unbelievable job on the Trump Foundation. He should 1,000% win a Pulitzer for that.
100%. He is, but, absolutely incredible.
No, he's been great, and he's far from the only one. We just have an unbelievable political staff. I mean, I've always been I've always been interested in politics, and, you know, I started at the Post just under a year ago, right after, you know, mid-November last year, and it's been so much fun to be able to be part of this staff and just kind of watch all the amazing coverage we've done to this election, which has been obviously pretty insane. So, go subscribe to the Washington Post. You can read, I'm doing a ton of season preview stuff. I did this bowl predictions column today. I had a whole awards column yesterday, come out. I'm doing, predictions for the whole, every division in order, all the playoffs and stuff. I think that's coming out tomorrow. There'll eventually be a best case, worst case for every team in the league that comes out. Doing a lot of stuff to preview the season ahead of it starting next week, which should be fun. So go check all that out. And I guess I should plug, I also have a podcast that Fred has been on, and it'll hopefully be on again soon, called Posting Up. You can find that on iTunes. So, give that a search and download that if you would. And, just keep finding my stuff. Hopefully I won't be inciting the anger of Thunder fans all season long.
You're either a homer or a hater, Tim. You got to pick one.
That's right. There is no in between.
That's so, well, you know, those are the only two options.
That's very true. I know which one I'll be today for sure. So
homer or hater is going to be the name of some like book that like philosophy book that comes out about like the adjustment in psyche that the internet has given to our culture.
Yeah. I'm not even going to comment on that. Just going to leave that alone.
Why are you being a hater about my idea? You can remember I'm on every weekday, Monday through Friday, and you can head on to iTunes to subscribe to Locked On Thunder. If you have any questions or comments, Email lockedonthunder@gmail.com. You can also find me on Twitter at Fred Katz, FREDKATZ, and you can tell me all of your homer and hater opinions. Lock on to normantranscript.com for all your Thunder needs, and check out Thunder Road. That's my blog there under the sports tab on the site, and you can see what's next for the Thunder there. That's going to do it for today. Back with you tomorrow for more Thunder and NBA talk before we wrap up for the weekend. Until next time, though, Locked On Thunder is locking up.